o'clock. I mentioned to Pippa that this afternoon during the program, I would be talking to a psychiatrist about snook. And she burst out laughing because she simply couldn't understand what the link is between psychiatry and snookery. And it is quite difficult to understand. But Robin Emsley, who is a professional psychiatrist and an academic psychiatrist, sent me a book called Snook on the Couch. And it is a book which is impossible to categorize. What is it, Robin?
Well, it's a book about the snook. It's a snook book. It's about the snook people, the people who catch the snook. And it's about other things, including evolution, the meaning of life, and things like that. So it's a book. It started about 7 years ago. And this was when my family and I... We moved to the West Coast. We bought a holiday house on the West Coast, and for the first time, I came into contact at close quarters with the snook, which was quite a shock to me.
You hit the sibilant S a little bit there, the snook, as if as if it's not just a snook, it's a snook.
It's a snook, yeah. So my parents were from Scotland. And we grew up, the only fish that I was used to were kippers, haddocks, and I&J fish fingers. So the snook was something foreign to me until we moved to the West Coast. And on the West Coast, the snook is obviously, it's one of the dominant features. And in many ways, it epitomizes the essence of the West Coast. It's rugged, it's harsh. But at the same time, there's a strange kind of beauty and fascination to this fish. So I went down to the harbor, the St. Helena Bay Harbor, every year, early winter. That's when the snook runs typically occur. And I started photographing the boats coming in and all of these snook. And then I discovered that the people who catch the snook are as fascinating as the snook itself.
The snook people.
That's it, yeah. And they're unique in, particularly in the way they express themselves. So, again, this was absolutely fascinating to me. And every year around early winter, I would go down and take photographs. And I decided then that let me put a book together of the photographs. And at some stage, I realized that the photographs wouldn't really convey what I was thinking and what I was wanting to get across. So I started adding text, and this I did by, I was totally ignorant about the snook, so as most people do these days, I access the internet and get a lot of information, and started learning more about the snook and everything that goes with it. So first of all, everybody on the West Coast loves the snook. But my wife and I, well, we struggled.
I must tell you, when I was letting people know that I would be talking to you about a book called Snook on the Couch, the vast majority of them said, better on the couch than on my plate. So it is a snook it is a fish which draws divided opinions, shall we say.
Absolutely, absolutely. You either love it or you don't. And I fall into the latter category, and... couldn't understand why everybody on the West Coast loved this fish. When we tried to brine it and try to eat it, it didn't work very well. So then I started researching about the snook and things that had troubled me. You know, everybody talks about the snook worms and about pup snook. So I decided to learn a little bit more about that, and that certainly didn't help at all because they're very real, these things, and... not conducive to appetizing meals.
I've never seen the snook worm, but it exists, and it's not pretty.
Actually, they're pretty common, and I discovered that what we used to think were snook veins, those are the actual worms. So those white, long, stringy things, those are the snook worms.
I wish
worms.
You could see Stefan's face.
And pup snook is equally scary, actually. It's a microsporian parasite that invades the snook, and when the snook dies, it releases proteolytic enzymes, and that this actually causes the flesh to go soft. And but it's not just snook. It's actually what they call a cosmopolitan parasite. So it affects a whole series of fish, including salmon. You get wolffish and lumpfish, and you even get something called a mushy halibut syndrome. So what it's actually called post-mortem myoliquefaction, and it's a problem with snook and other animals. But then I moved on from snook and eating snook, and the main thing about the snook is its incredible facial features. It has this amazingly expressive face. It's got these huge eyes that seem to be sad and appealing, that seem to be looking straight at us.
This is a scientist talking. I can't believe it.
Well,
you're not supposed to be anthropomorphizing.
Absolutely not. And the facial the mouth, you know, the downturned mouth and the protruding jaw, it seemed to me to convey depression, sadness, but also stubbornness. And and using those facial features, I actually explored aspects of adaptation, survival, evolution. And then the big thing that kept on coming up was self-awareness, and asking myself, how much do these animals, these snooks, actually understand what's going on? What do they feel? Do they have emotions? And when I went and Googled all of this, turns out that we're probably grossly underestimating the capacity of other animals to experience, to feel, the cognitive capacity. And
it's hard to believe that the snook has any cognitive capacity.
Yeah. You know, and subsequent to writing the book, I've come across some amazing literature about one in particular, a professor, Robert Ellman, from Belfast University. And in the book, I actually tongue-in-cheek describe snook personalities as a part of an adaptive process. And I talk about snook with perfectionistic, obsessive-compulsive features who stick to the routine, which is very important in survival. But then you get other snook which are more risk-seeking, I call them happy-go-lucky snook. And turns out, in fact, that there's a whole lot of research out there. And this guy doesn't call them happy-go-lucky fish. He calls them bold and shy fish. But that's exactly what happens. In a group of fish, you have different personalities. And they usually, as a group, take a collective decision as to whether to go for the food or not. And it's the balance in that group that is the decisive factor. So personalities, intelligence, there's a fish called a grouper has been considered to have the equivalent intelligence of a primate, and in fact has been considered to be able to distinguish between people it likes and people it doesn't like, and behaves differently towards them. And there was another incredible article recently in The Guardian, and the author was a guy called Carl Safina, and he's asking, are we wrong to assume that fish cannot feel pain? And he provides a whole lot of information to suggest that, in fact, fish do feel pain.
But fish also inflict pain. I mean, you talk about the great injustice,
yeah,
which is around human beings eating things for their own pleasure.
Mm.
But the snook do the same. The snook eat smaller fish. So
that's right.
The snook feel pain when they are eaten by an apex predator, but they don't care about the pain of the smaller fish that they are eating to survive.
Yeah. Absolutely. So to me, that is, and I call it the great injustice, and it's the realization that for most species to survive, they have to kill and eat other animals to obtain energy and so on. So the hunters are hunted. And, you know, it's with us as well. Most of us eat other animals, which is in itself basically unthinkable. You know, it's just something that we don't want to consider, contemplate. So we use, amongst other things, we use psychological defense mechanisms to deal with this, and particularly denial. So we've actually made eating a central point of civil society. And, you know, so many restaurants, so many channels on TV are just about eating and making the food as appetizing as possible. But if you stop and think about it, you know, it's really very weird, because we place, on the one hand, we cherish life and we place huge value on preserving life. But on the other hand, we go around cultivating, breeding, selective breeding of animals, some to grotesque extent. We kill them, we prepare them, we eat them, and it's a whole ritual around this.
You know, it's in many ways a stupid question, but what does this have to do with snook?
So, the thing about the snook is that going down to the harbour and seeing these snook being dumped out onto the quayside, and seeing all the blood and guts with them there, it kind of brings it home very, mm-hmm. very sincerely. So the snook is just used as a vehicle for considering all of these things. And it's not a book about it's not a book for the vegans or anything like that. It's just my observations and contemplations.
And completely fascinating. I mean, it really is. We haven't had time to get into it, but there is Robin has a professional interest in schizophrenia, and there is a chapter on the theory that schizophrenia is the price we pay for having language, which just those four pages are worth the price of admission, as it were. And so these wonderful photographs and these references to the life, the snook people. And just very quickly, the proceeds are going to go to a fellowship, research fellowship, which will be tasked with improving the fishing and marketing of the snook in ways that will benefit the West Coast snook fishermen.
That's it. I thought that would be the best way of trying to put something back to the people who need it most. Because, you know, the thing that really bugs me is that we have this very, very successful, potentially successful industry, snook, and yet our supermarkets import the snook from New Zealand. And that doesn't sound right. And the local fishermen are really struggling for survival. So if we can get some money together, we can research the reasons why this is happening. Why aren't the supermarkets wanting to use the local snook, and try and do something about it?
Well, you can make a contribution to that by buying snook on the couch. There's no recipe as to how to buy snook. You'll have to ask your neighbors or ask Google for that. But everything else you might want to know about snook is in Snook on the Couch by Robin Emsley. Thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Snook fishermen are their own worst enemies, says Dion. They simply refuse to take ice to sea. Snook would be more valuable were they caught into an ice slurry. Somebody else says the worms, or melkdrader, are common in many of our local fish. If you've eaten local fish, you've eaten the worms. Yay, that makes me want to rush out and order a plate of local fish immediately.